Welcome back, colleagues. I hope everybody is back. Thank you. We now proceed to deal with the last section, and Advocate Bauer or Mayos will just explain to us what's outstanding, what they're going to take us through. And it should not be much longer from now. So thank you for your patience up to so far. Advocate Bauer or Advocate Mayosi, we're in your...
Chair, where we are, we having connectivity issues. I am connected, but Tsepo and Nazreen are not connected. And it's important for Tsepo to be connected so she can do what she does. If you could give us 2 minutes, please, Chair.
Fine. I'll make it 5. We'll start at 12 past.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks.
Power connected.
Problem solved.
Okay, thank you. Over to you.
Chair, we completed essentially the reliance, if you look at the chart, on the unit/Danke for the issue relating to the executive member.
Recording in progress.
Code.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress. Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
Okay, Chair. So we had completed the issues relating to the SARS matter, the SARS unit matter, except for the issues of the Executive Ethics Code, which we will deal with some of when we deal with the issue in its entirety under the CR17 matter. So in brief, Chair, if I take you to the summation, just to give you an idea of where we at, Chapter 3, Part 1 deals with essentially the SARS matter in the context of Charge 11, and will show you down the view side of the margin the different aspects of it, and I'm going to use that as a sort of a guide of where we're going through. So this is the report, which is essentially titled a report on an investigation into a violation of the ethics code through an improper relationship to the President and African Global Operations, AGO, formerly known as PATA. And the report is signed on the 19th of July, 2019. That date in mind because it is relevant for two issues we come to in a bit. The independent panel concluded there was prima facie evidence in respect of the findings that was made on both the grounds of incompetence as well as misconduct. And members will recall that this arose in the context of a donation of $500,000 that was made and it was represented to Parliament that this was a donation made to the President's son and to his trust fund. And so the complaints lodged, there were two complaints lodged with the public protector, one from Mr. Mayamani and one from Mr. Shivambo. And the CR17 report identified three issues for investigation, which you see in paragraph 11. As to those three issues that I'm going to turn in broad terms, that the President had deliberately and inadvertently misled Parliament, that he had failed to disclose donations to the CR17 campaign, and the third issue was that he supported the prima facie suspicion of money laundering. And the question then arises whether in the context of the investigation, there was a lack of impartiality and independence in how that was to be conducted. So let's start on the first issue, which is the what I'm going to call mere complaint, right? And in order to deal with the mere complaint, it's of the same nature as the complaint made against Mr. Gordhan in the SARS unit matter. And the reason I put them together is because there's an overlap in evidence when arises as to whether the public protector had used the wrong code. The concession was made in oral and for the committee that she accepts that she used the wrong code. The argument for the committee was slightly different. In the context of the Gordhan matter first, it took up distance 5 pages of the report. There's no reference in it to either the 2007 code specifically or 2000 code in the report. It simply states in paragraph 5.11 of the report what the provision of the executive ethics code is. And the only findings made against Mr. Gordhan was that didn't seem to be a mistake, and that the public protector had found it rather implausible in one.
Just try to reposition yourself. There's just continued break up. Unlike before, you were very clear throughout the day. It's only starting now. Try and reposition yourself. I don't know why it's breaking up.
I went on my different connection.
Okay, let's try again. Go ahead.
Right, I should be connected via that connection, which should make it easier now.
That's better.
To do that, right?
Thank you.
That problem is solved. Okay, so Chair, the findings against Minister Gordhan was not based on any independent investigation. Mr. Magujani or the staff of Mr. Gordhan's office was not interviewed. It was based on Mr. Gordhan saying, I have no recollection of any of the family members of the Gupta family being at this meeting. Mr. Magujani says he recalls them being there. And then there's a conclusion made that I wouldn't have expected him to have forgotten this. It doesn't seem to be plausible. And then a finding is made that Mr. Gordhan misled Parliament. That was the essence of the entire case. So if you look at the contrast with the president in respect of the code, the first point is that the code is the wrong code is used, the wrong test is used, and there's then an admission that there is initially not an admission that the wrong test is used. That is then occurs to come up only later. Throughout the report, there are, I think we counted something like 5 versions of the code located in the report at the time. And we then concluded that that it wasn't simply one version. It wasn't just the 2000 code or the 2007 code. And then we know that, Chair, when the and this was the reason why we linked the two cases together, is because the litigation in the two matters ran almost side by side. And what had transpired in the CR-17 matter in the High Court, Advocate Mkabani filed an answering affidavit on the 14th of November in which he admitted that the 2000 Executive Ethics Code was the correct code, but that the use of the incorrect code was actually immaterial to her findings because she was basing it on deliberate misleading and not inadvertent misleading. But 2 days later, on 16th of November, in an answering affidavit in SARS unit matter, she persisted in relying on the incorrect version of the executive ethics code. And that was one of the difficulties one found on that reliance. When argument gets made before the High Court, the reliance on the 2007 code in the CR17 matter, but on the application for leave to appeal, there's a concession that is wrong. And the concession says it's wrong. The 2000 code is the correct code. And an explanation is then provided that at that stage of the proceedings, there was a reliance on the ministerial handbook, which was incorrect in doing that. And so one finds that that's the position as it is. And then what transpires is the Constitutional Court judgment gets handed down on the 1st of July 2020. And it then finds that the public protector had used the wrong code. And advice is then received the following day from Mr. Ngubeni. And you see that this advice, if SHEPA goes up, we have previously referred to it as CH3D. So the up, it's linked to the SARS unit section. There we go. 3D. It's at the end of parts 1, 3, and 4. Go down, sorry, Shekel. All right, I'll continue in doing that. And as a consequence of that advice, click on the F. Go down. There's a 3D. Chair would know from the evidence that we led through Mr. Sitoli that the original advices and reliance was placed on an opinion from Mr. Ngubeni in which reliance was placed on the 2007 ethics code. In this opinion, which informed the report, and we had led that evidence before the inquiry. What transpires after the Concord hands down judgment is that there's an application for rescission brought a few weeks later, seeking to rescind the decision because the Constitutional Court had made a patent error in its interpretation of the Executive Ethics Code. And what preceded that, Chair, is this email from Mr. Ngubeni sent to Mr. Sitoli's private email address, his work email address, and the public protector's private email address, in which he advocates for the bringing of the rescission application, and he sets out the basis upon which such application should be brought, being a patent error being made that the court had relied on the wrong ethics code, and he points to reports that he says Advocate Madan Sala had handed down and the Kandla judgment, which you will know the public protector led extensive evidence on in respect thereof. And Chair, we extensively address in the summation why the reliance on the Kandla judgment is incorrect and how it's a misconception of the whole principle of stare decisis. In saying that the judgment is binding because there's a reference in the footnote on it. We deal with that in the summation at length. And we also deal with this issue about whether what's called touchstone decisions form the basis of of the decision which was made. The affidavit before this committee and the court was essentially that in the state capture report and in the secure and comfort report, Advocate Madinsela had relied on the 2007 code. We had put before the committee the extracts to show that effectively that is not correct, that Advocate Madinsela in those reports had not relied on the 2007 code. We also point out that it is so that there are reports in the Public Protector's Office that does rely on the incorrect Executive Ethics Code, but it is not the case as was represented that consistently from 2009 to 2007 code was relied upon. So the reliance on the 2007 code is essentially the first ground, which is a material error of law, and the question of the committee must find whether that's sufficient to show misconduct and incompetence, and in the manner in which that was dealt with during the investigation. Chair, the committee will also know that from the written statement put before the committee, it has been alleged that Advocate Mkabane alleges that the 2007 code has since repealed the 2000 code. And for that reason, there had been reliance put on it, and that Advocate Madinsela had consistently applied the incorrect code. The second aspect is that in the report, the Code of Ethical Conduct and Disclosure Members' Interest for the National Assembly and Permanent Council Members Act, I think it's, you would know it as the Parliamentary Code, was invoked for purposes of this aspect, but it wouldn't have applied because the president was already a member executive at the time he had made his representations to Parliament. So it's against that background, Chair, the concession is made to the committee that she had not complied with this. The minority and majority decisions at the Constitutional Court was in agreement on this issue. I then move on to the second ground. I'm going to deal with all three grounds, Chair, and then the committee can deal with the CR 17 judgment in one go, if that's in order, Chair.
That's in order. Please go ahead.
All right. So the second issue was whether there had been a, what was the second issue? Whether the president had an obligation to make disclosures of the donations and the CR17 campaign. The two things I must point out here is that one of the issues that arise in the CR17 campaign is that in respect of the Shivambu complaint, his complaint was unsubstantiated, as the court found, because his complaint was twofold. Given that the 500,000 had not been paid by AGO to Andile Ramaphosa, which the public protector confirmed, and that EFG2 account was not a trust or foundation of the son of the president Ramaphosa, the public protector having confirmed that both of that was incorrect, whether as such the president wasn't entitled to a finding that the Shivambu complaint was unsubstantiated. So if you then turn to how this expanded into a CR17 campaign investigation, Chair, the Constitutional Court found that the public protector had no jurisdiction to be investigating the CR17 funds, and that the factual averments which was contained in the president's response to the section 7-9 notice was not did not find its way into the report, and in particular one has regard to what the allegations were in respect of how much money the CR17 campaign had effectively collected and what was told to this committee versus what the president had represented, which didn't find its way into the report. And that was one of the issues that had been raised. So the one was a question of VRAs. Can the public protector investigate it? The answer was no. The second point is, did the public protector correctly reflect what was being investigated? And thirdly, if not, did the public protector show that there was a, and the reason for it not being eligible for investigation was because political parties' internal affairs did not constitute state affairs. And hence the public protector had no jurisdiction under either the EMEA, the Act, or the Constitution to so investigate party affairs. The third aspect of it was that the president was not given Audi in respect of a number of those issues. And the motivation that the public protector gave for wanting to investigate this issue, Chair, was premised on what the public protector said was the emails I received and the dinners and the public protector's evidence himself. Now, if I just, in two sentences, deal with the emails. The emails was a few emails, Chair, that was shown to this committee, and we deal with it quite extensively. It was suggested to this committee that there were numerous emails that had been sealed, and we explained in the summation why that could not have been so, given that the email had been discovered, and the only emails that was discovered constituted 7 pages, which made its way into the Rule 53 record. The sealing had only happened in respect of the private bank accounts and the information that had obtained through the Financial Intelligence Center much later, after the Rule 53, not much later, but after the Rule 53 process had been completed. And we take you through how that comes about from roughly 205 of the documents. And so the question is, does the emails reflect that the president was constantly involved in the process and kept up to date with it? The Constitutional Court found that was not the case because it was no indication of such being so with the 3 or 4 emails that had come out. Chair, you were also referred to newspaper articles and some of the investigations that the journalists had conducted to verify the information on the emails was not conducted by Advocate Mkabane and appears to, on the face of it, not confirm what's on the emails. And in the founding papers of the High Court application, the elements of the charge of money laundering is set out and effectively confirms that you've erred in your definition of money laundering, because money laundering is not about how many bank accounts you you put the money into. It's about the source of the funding. So you could have had 10 intermediary accounts and it wouldn't necessarily constitute to give rise to prima facie finding of money laundering. In contrast, what the public protector does is she refers to the PRECA Act, the PRECA Act being the Prevention and the Combating of Corruption Activities Act. Throughout, and there are numerous references in her report, as opposed to the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, the latter being the one that deals with money laundering. And effectively, the court then concludes that not only is there a material error of law, nor is it an innocent reference to the incorrect act, because it's the report is replete with representations, references to that act. And so the question then comes from, was it a deliberate effort to try and make this finding and an act in which she had jurisdiction to make a conclusion against the president? And that's a good reference as to whether it's where the court would make a finding. So, Chair, in essence, those were the three things. And then it came to the question of remedy. There were certain remedies issued, Chair, and those remedies related to interference with the prosecutorial independence and interference with the speaker in the way the remedy was crafted, and both the fact that there was not only was the remedy crafted in a manner that made it binding on the public protector, on the prosecutor, the National Director of Public Prosecutions, to take steps, but it would have been under the aegis of the public protector that was done. And in respect of the speaker, it set out precisely what the remedy of the speaker was supposed to undertake. And that was regarded as an infringement of the powers of the speaker. Chair, this is not a case in respect of which a personal cost order was made against the public protector. Instead, a punitive cost order was made against the office of the public protector in this regard. So this was not a case as which the committee was told was an instance of double jeopardy, not that double jeopardy applies in doing that. The litigation cost, inclusive of legal opinions obtained, approximated to something like 6.5 million rand in this matter, and both in its appeal to the Constitutional Court and in the rescission application in totality, that was granted. Chair, just give me a minute to see if I've missed anything in summation. Yeah, so the one point that the courts noted, Chair, was that the president's response to Section 7I notice as to the movement of donations was completely ignored. Advocate Mkabani made a finding that because funds was transferred to the Cyril Ramaphosa Trust, him and his family had personally benefited without actually ascertaining who the beneficiaries to this trust was. And it wasn't them, and they were not ultimately in control of the day-to-day running of the trust. And there's a explanation in the 7I notice as to how it comes about that funds are transferred to the Cyril Ramaphosa Trust. In other words, there was a failure to investigate and a failure to consider the evidence provided in the Section 7I notice. I think that covers the gist of it, Chair. The members would be aware that we've extensively set out the evidence in Chapter 3, Part 1 of the summations that has been made, which deals with these aspects in more detail and also sets out what the Advocate Mkabani's evidence was in respect of each of them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer. Colleagues, that's the last presentation on those matters. I'm inviting you to respond to what has been presented, the summation and everything else that you know, as well as responding to those three questions, which relate to issues of impartiality, independence, and the nature of the investigation itself, and the conduct of the PP. May I invite you to make contributions? If you are still here.
We are.
Okay. Is that a hand, Honorable Ngosi? Honorable Milam? Honorable Gondwe? Honorable Maneli, in that order, thank you. Honorable Milam.
Chairperson, I'm less concerned about the actual investigation itself and more concerned about the report.
I raised my hand. I don't know if you can see it from my gadget. I think it's after Gondwe.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I see it now. Thank you. Sorry, Honorable Milam.
No problem, Chairperson.
Go ahead.
Thank you. So I'm less concerned with the conduct during the investigation and more the report and remedial actions that were recommended. And in particular, I think that the position of the public protector with regard to the EMEA matter, both in CR17 and in SARS Rogue Unit, as well as the Precker finding and her finding that there was prima facie evidence of money laundering, notwithstanding her reliance on Precker and her remedial action in referring that to. In fact, not referring it, in ordering the National Prosecuting Authority to take the matter further. I find those both to be bad in law and an overreach by the public protector. And as such, it goes again to her incompetence in performing her job. So I believe that she is incompetent in that regard. I don't want to talk to the actual investigation itself. It's rather focused on the report and the remedial actions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maela. Honorable Ngola.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's a big no in all. The fact that there's been a serious misapplicability of law, the difference between poker and precker, the application of wrong laws, suggests that it's a no in all the three. The use of a wrong executive ethics code, and beyond that, tampering and impeding into the independence of the prosecuting authority was beyond reproach. So it's a no, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ngola. Honorable Gondwe.
Chair, I agree with previous speakers. She relied on the wrong code, on the wrong legislation, and honestly speaking, that doesn't bode well for someone in her position and for the Office of the Public Protector. We would think that they would
be able to rely on the correct legislation. But that having been said, Chair, I'm not sure if any of the members have raised this earlier today, but the involvement of Mr. Ngobeni has once again, reared its ugly head in this particular investigation. And Chair, I also think that we shouldn't take his involvement lightly, and the role that Sianoho attorneys played in roping him in to the business of the Office of the Public Protector. And I'm not entirely sure how we should ensure that that matter is also investigated and looked into, because Chair, it cannot be right, it must not be right, that someone who's not authorized to practice law in the country is able to give advice, provide advice on such, sensitive and high profile investigations at an institution such as the Office of the Public Protector. So through you, Chair, just a plea that that matter also needs to be looked at into, and also the role that Sianoho attorneys played in procuring his services. I don't know whether that matter then needs to be channeled through the Legal Practice Council or how we're going to handle it, but his constant, the role that he continued to to play in some of these investigations, insofar as advice and the opinions that he used to provide is worrisome. And more so because, as I indicated earlier, some of these investigations are high profile and sensitive. I mean, this investigation involves the president of the country, and you wouldn't want to think that someone who's not not allowed to practice in the country and is a fugitive from justice is actually providing opinions on what is possibly the fate of the head of state of this country. So Chair, please, if you can note that down, that is another matter that needs to be investigated. But like my previous colleagues, I agree, there was material errors of law. She relied on the wrong legislation. As Honorable Ngola pointed out, she relied on the PRECA Act and not the POCA Act. And she also relied on the wrong code. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Gondwe. Honorable Maneli.
Thank you, Chair. I think the points have now been covered to justify the no's of those questions. And that I think the points made in relation to law also with regard to the issue of personal benefit in this regard without any basis. I think it's safe to say, Chair, that once again, the issue of the independent panel gets to be substantiated in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maneli. Honorable Ngosi.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm covered. I just want to emphasize what Honorable Gondwe has indicated around a specific, we need on the basis of what has been presented on the role of external people impairing the impartiality and independence of the public protector to express a view. And I agree with her that and we need a specific recommendation on that, particularly him as a non-practicing attorney or advocate.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Ngosi, Honorable Lagode.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me say that I echo the same sentiments as my colleagues, and also to bring this to the attention of the committee, that the PP, notwithstanding these glaring errors, litigating the matter up to the Constitutional Court and further lodged a rescission application, only for her to admit to the committee after state resources were wasted when she knew she had erred. This, we believe, is not a genuine admission. Had she considered this in the review application when the president pointed it out, the wasteful expenditure in legal fees could have been avoided. So I'm adding this for the committee's consideration with regard to her using the wrong act, and also for continuing with litigation, even though she knew that she made a mistake. Had she had avoided that, state resources wouldn't have been wasted. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lagude. Honorable Suela.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me join my colleagues. Chairperson, I think here we're dealing with a matter which affects the head of state. It needs to be considered. We all know that there is no one who is above law, but it is good for our leaders who have been given a responsibility to act according to law. The issue of employing people who do not have relevant qualifications is highly questionable, Chairperson. So I agree with my colleagues that in our recommendations we must also indicate that this matter needs to be investigated, because we are trying to correct the situation in future, and also to learn lessons that given a responsibility, you need to be yourself and you need to play the ball, not the man. Here, when we check the issue of a reviewal to courts, et cetera, it leaves us with questions, because once an outcome has been given on a particular matter, one will have to think twice before you continue with those litigations. Hence, the PP failed to avoid issues of waste of resources. And to me, the use of wrong legislation also is also questionable from her side. So I'm really in support with those other members who are saying that we need also to make a special recommendation that it be investigated why external people who are not even legally competent or relevant to that particular job were given powers to execute such execution. That's my submission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suela. Is there any other member? Is there any dissenting view? Honorable Dana?
Thank you, Chair. Now, Chair, I think I was largely covered, but I do think that mention should be made of fruitless and wasteful expenditure of public resources with unnecessary court battles where wrong legislation was being used in investigation. So I would support that we make mention of that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Dana. Maybe as we then summarize it, so that I, on those three questions, I'm with you. You are saying in 130.1 that the suspended public prosecutor did not conduct investigation in a manner that ensured impartial and impartial conduct of the investigation. Is that agreed?
Agreed.
Agreed, Chair.
Two, you're saying, did Advocate Mkhwebane conduct an investigation in a manner that ensured independent? You're saying the investigation did not show that there was independence in the investigation. Is that agreed?
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed. Correct.
Three, did Advocate Mkhwebane make her decisions in a manner that ensured the impartial conduct of the investigation? Is that so?
No.
Say no?
No, Chair.
No, Chair.
No.
Thank you. And if you look at all of those three questions, would you then say she would have then committed misconduct or and incompetence?
Yes, Chair.
Honorable Gonder?
Yes, Chair. Agreed.
Agreed.
In all of it, okay. Any other member?
No, Chair, it's misconduct and or incompetence because the two are intertwined on this aspect. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair,
thank you.
It's misconduct and incompetence.
thank you. All right.
Misconduct and incompetence. Agreed, Chair.
Thank you. Now,
misconduct accompanied by incompetence.
Okay. Now that you have done this exercise, we'll just, as we summarize, try and do it in the others. Can we do the others, Advocate Bauer and Tsepo?
Sorry, Chair, I'm lost to you. Are you asking us to go on to the two other cases that is referred to in the section? The James case and the subpoena case.
You still have that to do.
Yeah, but that's quick, Chair.
No, please go ahead.
Okay. So if you see on the as part of the motion, there are two further cases that are referred to, which we deal with in parts three and parts four. They are referred to in chapter three, part three of it. And this is the case you will recall during the evidence was, I'm first going to part three, Shepo, where there was an agreement between the public protector and SARS in getting an opinion as to whether the public protector can issue a subpoena for private information. The High Court found against her, and the High Court found against her because on the merits, but then also made a personal cost order against her because there was a deal entered into between the public protector's office and SARS that effectively said SARS will, they would jointly obtain this opinion, SARS would pay for it because the public protector's office was suffering from financial difficulties. They set out the instructions, the officials picked the advocate, and when the opinion came from the chosen advocates, the opinion was rejected, and the High Court said that that was, and Advocate Mkhwebane then went out and got another opinion. And she instructed the office to get an opinion from a counsel which will contradict that opinion. And we deal with that in the evidence. And this evidence of what we obtained from the emails of the instructions is not before the courts. The matter then goes on application for leave to appeal to the Constitutional Court. The Constitutional Court then finds that on the merits, the original opinion obtained from SARS was correct. So on the merits, the public protector can't issue subpoenas for private tax people's information. But on the question of costs, there's judgment of Justice Madlanga, which was referred to at length during the argument, where he sets aside the personal cost orders against the public protector, and he cautions courts not to be as not to hand down cost orders as easily as personal cost orders, as it seemed to have occurred in that case. And that was used as a stepping stone to saying, well, by not giving a personal cost order against the public protector, she cannot be found guilty of misconduct. And the independent panel report then agreed that they were not going to make a finding that there was a prima facie finding of misconduct against her, on the basis that the court said she was entitled to seek another opinion. And we set out in the summation those aspects of it. The only issue that we raise in addition to that, or one of the issues we raise in addition to that, is that in paragraph 402, during the period in which SARS is told that the Public Protector's Office doesn't have funds to solicit it, to get its own opinion, they are effectively paying Mr. Ngubeni sums of money to do other work. And we detail that in paragraph 402 and 403, whether the submission was then correctly made to the courts and to SARS that effectively we couldn't have funding to do what was core business of the Public Protector's Office. So, Chair, can I just take you quickly into GEMS, and then the committee can deal with both together or separately? Up to you, Chair.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is a complainant in a dispute relating to the government employees' medical scheme, and we set out in the summation the facts that give rise to it and the findings of the Constitutional Court, and the court finding that the approach was regrettable, that they hadn't complied with constitutional values of professional ethics, accountability, transparency, etc. And the independent panel found that there was prima facie evidence of incompetence and prima facie evidence of misconduct. There is one difference that does come up when we didn't hear evidence on this, Chair, and we didn't have anything that came directly from the witnesses in respect of GEMS. But we do want to point out that what makes GEMS a slightly different case to the other cases, if you see in paragraph 416, Advocate Mkabani doesn't deal with this investigation and judgment either to the independent panel or in anything before the committee. And I think we can't take issue with it because we didn't put up any information in respect of GEMS. So that's the first thing. There wasn't anything for her directly to respond to besides the judgment. And although she signed the subpoenas in the matter, which she would ordinarily do, she didn't depose to the affidavits in the litigation, nor did she play, nor is an explanation of her role in the investigation or any direct instruction given or direct involvement in respect of the early stages of the investigation. There is a delegation given by her to another investigator to act on her behalf. And so we were not able to secure the cooperation of the investigator, who is no longer in the employ of the PwC, and he did speak to us, but was not amenable to providing information on the record. And so we did not put what in our view would have been complete evidence before the inquiry. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Bauer. Is that it? You don't have any other after this to present?
Chair, Advocate Mayosi needs to deal with you on two aspects dealing with Ngubeni and the appointment of Mr. Niyembi.
Okay.
If you just want to deal with subpoena matters and GEMS, and then Advocate Mayosi can just deal with those two aspects in the context of Charge 11-3, which you then completed, Chair.
All right. Thank you. Let's then honorable members respond to these two that have been presented here now, GEMS and et cetera. Let's just go back to the questions, Tsepo, as I invite members.
Chair, there's no specific questions on GEMS, but it's the same questions that was asked in respect of the impartiality and independence insofar as applicable to the CR17 matter.
No problem then. Thank you. Honourable members, your responses? You're almost there. You can't get tired now. Do I have any hands? Honorable Maneli.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the latter matter of GEMS, I think matters that have not been canvassed and evidence led in the committee. I still want to suggest, Chair, that it's difficult for us to express a specific view on the matter.
Yeah.
Except to note, of course, Chair, that yes, it may have been a matter that would have been looked at by an independent panel if it has been through the independent panel and made a finding. But from a committee point of view, because this we have not tested, I want to submit that it's not specific on it, Chair.
Thank you. Maneli, suggestion that we have no view to express. Honorable Klape.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I support Honorable Maneli on this one. And the evidence leader is indicating that there are no questions on this. But safe to note, Chair, on her introductory part on that court judgment, where they pick issues of incompetency and everything. I'm just finding a golden thread, Chair, on all the investigations that has been done, as alluded by my colleagues, as and when they were deliberating, that whether it's intentional or it's issues of incompetency, you find that golden thread of not being really, I don't know if you rushed into taking decisions or it was intentional decisions has been taken or what could have been the issue, but it borders allowing issues of incompetency and really wanting to reach such conclusions. So even if we don't have anything on this one, Chair, I would say the golden thread remains throughout all these investigations. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Klape, for that consistent golden thread of incompetency. Thank you. Any other member? Is there any dissenting view?
No.
Okay, thank you. Summary that we express no particular view on those issues that would have come to the committee, but also I think a note, as Honorable Klape makes the point, that there are consistent patterns and issues standing out throughout this, as you would have mentioned. Let's proceed therefore from that, colleagues, and get to invite Advocate Mayosi and Advocate Bauer for the next deliveries.
Yeah. Of course.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Belmayos.
Yes. Chair, issues relating to the appointment of Mr. Nyembe, first as a special advisor and then thereafter as the Chief of Staff, and the appointment of other services of Ms. Kimhela, Professor Siepe, and Mr. Ngobeni, impact on the determination of Charge 11.3, issues of impartiality, independence, and so on in the conduct of an investigation. And here, the impact on the Freire investigations as well as the SARS unit investigation and litigation. So Mr. Niels van der Merwe was asked to give evidence on the dates of appointment of Mr. Nyembe. And it seems from the evidence that was presented by him that Mr. Nyembe's appointment date, discussions around it occurred the year before, early 2018. So on the 8th of February, Mr. Nyembe, as a director, a sole director of an entity called Lawyers for Radical Economic Transformation, followed up on discussions he had had with Advocate Mkhwebane in relation to his appointment. He set out in that letter of the 8th of February what Lawyers for Radical Economic Transformation would offer, the services that would be offered. He was then appointed on the 15th of February 2018, rather more accurately on the 15th of February 2018, Advocate Mkhwebane wrote him a letter and confirmed his appointment as a special advisor with effect from the 1st of April 2018 for a 3-month period until the end of June 2018. What then occurred on the day before Advocate Mkhwebane's letter of the 15th of February, on the 14th of February, she approved a policy on the appointment of special advisors to the executive authority. So this was approved on the 14th of February 2018. Mr. Nyembe then assumed his position as special advisor on the 1st of April. In March 2018, Advocate Mkhwebane addressed a letter to the Minister of Finance, who at the time I think was Mr. Ntantanene, because in terms of the Act, Section 3 of the Public Protector Act, she was required to have consulted with the Minister of Finance prior to the passing of the policy for the appointment of special advisors. So she addressed the letter on the 22nd of March to the minister. The minister responded to her in June, in early June 2018, and the minister said to her that it appeared that she had already adopted the policy that she was seeking to consult him on, and he proposed that the policy be retracted so that consultation could occur. There was also an additional requirement that the policy had to be presented to the National Assembly 14 days after the Public Protector had adopted the policy, having consulted with the Minister of Finance. But earlier in May, an internal advice had been obtained, legal advice from Mr. Nemasisi, who was the legal manager at the time, relating to, amongst other things, the legality of the appointment of Mr. Nyembe. Mr. Nemasisi's advice was that due to the fact that consultation had not occurred with the Minister of Finance prior to the adoption of the policy, prior to the appointment of Mr. Nyembe, the policy was invalid. Mr. Nyembe's appointment should be terminated. The matter ultimately went to the Portfolio Committee in June, was considered by the Portfolio Committee, and the Portfolio Committee also expressed concerns around the appointment of a special advisor. It expressed concerns around the approval of the policy, but it also noted that the term of Mr. Nyembe was about to come to an end. What then occurred is that his term as special advisor came to an end at the end of June. Mr. Kelela testified that he then left the organization. After that, the position of chief of staff was advertised. He applied, he was interviewed, and he was then appointed as chief of staff with effect from the 1st of January, I think January 2019. And that appointment was to was for a fixed term contract of employment, which was linked to the term of office of the public protector. So in other words, that appointment would start from the 1st of January 2019. For a fixed term until October this year. As we know from the evidence that's been led, Mr. Nyembe passed away, I think sometime in 2020. So the various roles that Mr. Nyembe then played in his position as chief of staff were testified to by Mr. Muntu Sithole, as well as to some extent by Mr. Van der Merwe. He played a role in, for instance, the SARS subpoena matter, where he was copied in on correspondence by Advocate Mkwebane. For instance, the correspondence where she rejected the advices of the opinion of Advocate Maneji, and she instructed that another counsel be sought to contradict that opinion. Mr. Nyembe was party to that correspondence. He was also involved in the SARS unit matter. He would advise, he would be copied in on a correspondence. For instance, as members would be aware, in April, on the 23rd of April 2019, Advocate Mkwebane issued a media statement where she granted Mr. Godan an extension that he had sought for submitting his affidavit in response to a subpoena. She also, in that media statement, alluded to some kind of collusion between the implicated parties, Mr. Godan and SARS, in framing a response to her. What she then did was the following day, Mr. Matabuche, on the 24th of April, drafted a response that was to be sent to the attorneys of Mr. Godan. Mr. Nyembe contributed to that response. And that appears on paragraph 477, Sepo. Mr. Nyembe's proposal to that response is reflected in paragraph 477. The second sentence of that proposed response, he says, "We warn the attorneys and their principals to desist from conducting themselves this way against a constitutional institution as our office." 478 is also a continuation of Mr. Nyembe's proposed response, where he says that the public protector wishes to draw PG being Minister Godan's attention to the fact that despite having directed that a postponement could only be had via personal appearance before her at the PP's office, they violated the subpoena, as they didn't present themselves. And he says in the last sentence, I guess the point the PP wants to bring to PG's attention is that concretely he has already shown signs of being unruly. So this proposed response was in April 2019, during the time that the SARS unit matter was being investigated. Members will be aware that the report only came out, I think, on the 5th of July 2019. The sentiments that are reflected in this proposed response of Mr. Nyembe's, members will be aware, reflect those shared by Advocate Mkwebane, in the sense that she described in her court papers what she perceived as hostility in the attitude of Mr. Godan and his attorneys. So Mr. Muntu Sithole then testified that the appointment of Mr. Ngobeni to offer the services that he ultimately did came at the recommendation of Mr. Nyembe. Mr. Nyembe, the evidence was a big admirer of Mr. Ngobeni's intellectual prowess, and so it is he who then recommended that he be appointed to perform various services for the organization. And the services that he performed really ranged from, according to the evidence of both Mr. Van der Merwe and Mr. Sithole, drafting opinions, research, drafting media articles, and so on, in relation to the various methods. And perhaps those services are best described in, go to paragraph 521, Sepo, in an invoice that Mr. Ngobeni submitted to CNAHO. The mechanism for him to invoice the organization was that he would not invoice the PPSA directly, but rather his invoices would be sent via CNAHO. So his services and his attendances would be reflected on a CNAHO invoice. Yeah. So the services then that are stated there are a good reflection of what he provided at that time. And I'll just really focus on the ones that are underlined in the period from May 2019, June 2019, the dates reflected there. He received papers in the KSEC, DA, Frieda judgment, and provisional and final reports, final notice of appeal, all DA KSEC papers, researched and drafted preliminary argument on the 6th to the 10th of June. He received and researched direct access, leave to appeal, amended the notice of motion and supplementary affidavit and amended notice of motion. Members will see that on the 11th and 12th June 2019, he drafted a legal opinion on the controversy on the PP social media section 79 notices. Just to take you back, the context of that was on the 3rd of June, she, Advocate Nkwebane, did the YouTube appearance where she announced her intention to deliver a Section 79 notice to Minister Kodan in the context of the so-called rogue unit in investigation, and that advice there on the 11th and 12th of June appears to be an opinion in relation to that. And as we know, his advice was that there was nothing wrong with these matters being done in the manner that the PP was doing, because it was important to counter the narrative that was out there at the time. If you go down, Sepo, on page 146, just for members to note the services that Mr. Ngobeni was rendering at that time, on the 19th of June 2019, correspondence on Judge Tolmay's proposal for stay until Concord decides costs, that was in the context, I think, of the Frieda matter, and then further research and so on. But Mr. Ngobeni was not the only service provider whose services were used by the organization at the time. On the 18th of February, go down, Sepo, paragraph 529. Just before we leave this invoice, members, I omitted to bring your attention to the attendance of the 19th to the 20th of July 2019, where he says, Mr. Ngobeni's invoice, PP report on President Ramaphosa and researched legal challenges, CR raised, jurisdictional and factual issues. Members may recall that in her affidavit in the High Court, Ms. Fasani Baloy mentions that in the SARS unit and CR17 investigations, external consultants were used. That entry there would seem to corroborate the involvement of Mr. Ngobeni, at least in the CR17 matter at that time. Going down to paragraph 530. So Mr. Ngobeni then wasn't the only service provider. On the 18th of February 2019, Ms. Kim Heller of Kim Consultancy addressed an email to the personal assistant of Advocate Nkwebane requesting a meeting that ultimately then resulted in her sending a proposal of the services that she and Professor Siebe were going to offer to the organization. And if you go down SEPO, just for a snippet of what those services would be, on page 150, scroll down, page 150, where a portion of the proposal is reflected. The services that they were going to offer were strategic communication services to counter the total and unwarranted onslaught by media. Further details of their communication posture and program were provided in that proposal. Go down, Sepo, and look at the part that's underlined. They recommended that the office must not be seen to be preoccupied by the onslaught. Rather, it must use this time of heightened publicity to showcase those interventions that benefit the most disadvantaged and the voiceless majority. Put differently, there's a need to defocus the obsession with complaints involving Pravin by talking about the impact the office has had on ordinary people. It's about putting out there what the media will not cover. Over this period, we will write and publish a series of articles and social media communications which correct misperceptions, as well as offer a convincing portraiture of the good works of the office. If you go further down, the key thought pieces are reflected there, and those key thought pieces will focus, amongst other things, on judicial prejudice to the lynch mob mentality of the media, judiciary and civil society, and the deliberate unsteadying of the PP, unpacking the Pravin Gordhan saga, the undone matter of the rogue unit and SAEX, profiling the People's Public Protector. So in essence, the services were described there, and the cost for these strategic communication services for the period was reflected there. So in response to this proposal, if you go to, members will see at paragraph 542 that in response to Ms. Heller's proposal, Advocate Mkhwebane addressed that email to Mr. Nyembe, who was the Chief of Staff, and she says, Chief of Staff, this should include Advocate Ngobeni, and she requested a cost breakdown. So that, she continues, so that all can be accommodated, ask Theo, and that would be Mr. Theo Sienejo, to advise, cost per article, per interview arranged, etc. Paragraph 551. So the evidence leaders wrote to Professor Siepe and Ms. Heller, who responded in various ways to in describing the services that they rendered. Their response is part of their response, I must say, is captured there. For reasons that have nothing to do with incompetence, that proposal was not concluded. Subsequently, in mid-2019 and for a period of 3 months, strategic communication services were provided on an ad hoc basis, a part-time basis, to Advocate Paul Ngobeni, who was assisting Sienejo attorneys on matters of legal services and opinions. No services were provided beyond the three-month period. The invoices to support services rendered were duly submitted through Wekunene Business Services, registered in 2016. In their letter, they further stated, they confirmed that we provided our services, it was confirmed that we provided our services this time to Mr. Paul Ngobeni, who was contracted by the Office of the Public Protector. We had no direct working relationship with Dion Sienejo or Sienejo Attorneys Incorporated, except for the email communication recording regarding meetings amongst others. We were engaged by Mr. Ngobeni, so that is part of the response to the evidence leaders in the description of their services and the nature of their appointment. So as members will have seen, then Mr. Ngobeni performed a range of services. He also advised on the USA petition for the removal of Advocate Mkhwebane. I think Business Unity South Africa addressed a letter to the speaker seeking the removal of Advocate Mkhwebane. Mr. Ngobeni advised on that issue. He drafted a response, which he forwarded to Advocate Mkhwebane. However, the evidence of Mr. Fanny Merve, in his evidence, he was not certain whether that draft response was ever sent but we've captured the snippets of what of the draft response that Mr. Ngobeni prepared. So Ms. Heller then reported on the services that they provided. If you go to paragraph 567, she sent an email in June 2019 to Advocate Mkwebane, amongst others, Professor Siepe, Mr. Nyembe, which reflected a report that was to be tabled for discussion at a meeting that they were going to hold. In the last paragraph of the report, it stated that our work has been orientated around high impact initiatives and interventions that influence and shape desired outcomes. We have sought and secured prime space and audience on radio and television and in newspapers. We have also pursued and delivered a high presence social media campaign. Our media interventions have been coupled with advisory notes to the office and briefing of key influences behind the scenes. We believe we've managed to cause some disruption of the master narrative and succeeded in spearheading multiple calls by others for attacks on the public protector, attacks on the public protector to seize. So in essence, the report described their interventions during the period that they had been performing the services, and they proposed their next steps. We're looking into the feasibility of public televised colloquium on the deliberate manufacture of discontent and partisan eyes wide shut approach of media to the truth by advocating decisive legal action against those who trade in propaganda without evidence and harm. The reputation and standing of the public protector is recommended. In May, I think Advocate Bauer may have alluded to this earlier when she addressed the committee. In May 2019, after the judgment of Tolmay J in the Frieda Dairy matter, Mr. Ngobeni had authored an article entitled "Mobilizing the Judiciary for Political Attacks on the Public Protector. Can Justice Be Done Amid Efforts to Intimidate and Remove Our Public Protector?" So in the article, it contained criticisms against Judge Tolmay, which included, but are not limited to what is listed in paragraph 574.1, that she's a white paragon of judicial virtue. She's committed a plethora of legal errors in her judgment. It continued that her judgment was biased. She's no stranger to utilizing court judgments to advance populist causes untethered to the Constitution and the rule of law. After he drafted the article, Mr. Ngobeni then presented the article, the draft, to Advocate Mkwebane on the 23rd of May, and she responded that the article is good and it could be published. So what the evidence showed of Mr. Van der Merwe was that Advocate Mkwebane expressed a desire for Mr. Ngobeni to be appointed on more than one occasion, as will be seen in paragraph 581, where in the Mostert application, she said, "Please contact Ngobeni SC to check his availability," and in the DA and KSAC a matter, she requested the papers, which she then sent to Advocate Ngobeni, as she called him, and she asked him if he could assist the senior junior to prepare papers for the appeal. Advocate Ngobeni also responded to a number of questions that were sent to him by the evidence leaders. Some of his responses are reflected in paragraph 582 and its sub-paragraphs. Notably, he denied that he referred to himself as an advocate in his invoices. He's neither an admitted advocate nor an admitted attorney. He submitted that he's eligible to practice law in South Africa by virtue of a ministerial exemption in terms of the Recognition of Foreign Legal Qualifications and Practice Act. And the remainder of some of the salient features of his response are reflected there. He also stated that he, Ms. Hela and Professor Asiepe had an agreement with CNECO attorneys. He denied that he'd ever received payment on behalf of Ms. Hela at any time in respect of services provided by her directly or indirectly to the public protector. Chair, just on this issue of impartiality in general in investigations, we also touch upon the issue I think that was raised in Mr. Samuel's testimony about Advocate Mkhwebane having socialized with Mr. Zwane, who was the MEC that had primary responsibility at the time for the Free Edit project. He was one of the politicians against whom the PPSA made findings in the Free Edit 2 report. We bring this matter to air because it is, as we state, also an issue that this committee needs to consider insofar as Advocate Mkhwebane's ability to conduct or display impartiality or independence in the conduct of her investigations. Her evidence to the committee was that she hadn't invited Mr. Zwane to the 50th birthday, that he had come there with an invited guest and she could not turn him away. There's no other evidence before this committee that is available. The committee will have to consider the sufficiency of that explanation. So Chair, can I take a minute, Chair, just to look at my notes before I conclude? So Chair, we all of these appointments and these services that were being rendered in relation to the media interventions and the services of the strategic communication services, the publication of the articles, all of these matters were occurring at the time when the Free Edit litigation was underway. They were occurring at the time when the SARS unit matter was being investigated. And as we say, we raise this as an issue on which the committee ought to deliberate when it decides on the impartiality and independence of Advocate Mkhwebane, as is raised in 11.3 of the charges. Here, I must also point out that we don't have evidence of all the payments for all the invoices that are related to Mr. Ngobeni. Some of them were paid by CNECO. Mr. Ngobeni said in the Godan matter he was paid by council. So in essence, Chair, we don't want to create the impression that we had an entire paper trail of evidence in relation to all of the invoices. And some he indicated he never received payment for the services that he rendered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Mayosi. I see that whispering has improved. Thank you. That was a comprehensive presentation on those last issues, starting with Mr. Nyembe. Members, may I invite you to comment on these as we go towards the end? Honorable Mylam. Honorable Mylam, Honorable Klapper, is that an old hand or new hand?
That's old, Chair, thanks.
Okay, Honorable Bonde. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that the way that the evidence leaders have laid the summation out joins a lot of dots for us, and it creates a clear picture of a pattern of behavior on the part of the public protector. And that pattern of behavior, as I see it, as having been laid out by the summation, is the appointment of Cianejo to act as a front for various persons and companies to provide a propaganda machinery for the public protector. So it's quite ironic that Mr. Ngobeni and Ms. Heller say that they need to counter the propaganda of the other forces. I don't know quite where that sits or who that might be, but when she, the public protector, is utilizing their services to do exactly that. That's the first point. The second is that if we go back to Mr. Nyembe, he tweeted, and you will recall that there was quite a bit of controversy when that tweet was flighted, that one of his functions at the Office of the Public Protector was to jerk up the office politically and legally, and to provide socio-economic inputs to the public protector. Now, it appears that the public protector was pursuing a political agenda and that she was lining up resources that could help promote that particular political agenda. And thus she used the services of a particular communication consultant, a particular, I don't know quite what to call Mr. Ngobeni. I don't want to call him a legal advisor because he's not. But Mr. Ngobeni, Ms. Heller, Professor Siepe, and then Cianejo were employed to act as a front to channel funds to them in a manner that they were not employed directly by the Public Protector's Office. So I have some real concerns that this is blatant misconduct on the part of the Public Protector. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mylan. Honorable Gondo.
Chair, I agree with Honorable Mylan that Cianejo attorneys and I would like to implore the committee to please take the issue of the involvement of Mr. Ngobeni and Cianejo attorneys being used as a conduit for procuring his services, as well as those of Ms. Kim Heller and Prof. Siepe. We should take it in a very serious light because it also has cost implications, in the sense that, you know, you have the Office of the Public Protector paying for services that would ordinarily not be permissible when you look at you know, what is permissible in terms of an institution of its nature. You know, the cost that it would have to incur. So in other words, Chair, what I'm trying to say is that the only way that they could procure these services from Ngobeni and Kim Heller and Prof. Siepe was to use Cianejo attorneys as a conduit. And I remember asking Mr. Niels why they weren't just, you know, made service providers for the Office of the Public Protector. And he said something to the effect that, you know, it's perhaps because, you know, the type of services that they were offering and the fact that Mr. Ngobeni, as we now know, is not allowed to practice law in South Africa. You know, that wouldn't have ordinarily been allowed. And so, Chair, we really need to find a way to get this issue investigated, and more so the involvement of Cianejo attorneys. And as I indicated earlier, perhaps we should involve the Legal Practice Council and the Auditor General of South Africa also needs to be involved, because these were monies that came from the Office of the Public Protector. And in certain instances where it was articles that were put on websites, etc., that were not necessarily legal opinions. They were passed off as legal opinions when you look at the payment that was done. So that also needs to be investigated, so that someone needs to be held accountable for the payments that were made, because in certain instances it was passed off as a legal opinion when it wasn't a legal opinion. What Mr. Ngobeni had done was to write on websites defending the public protector, etc. Now coming to the issue of Mr. Nyembe, it's worrying that Mr. Nyembe, how he got the job, he simply wrote to the public protector and indicated that, I'm a lawyer, part of this Lawyers for Radical Economic Transformation. And we also saw that he indicated how much he wanted to earn, for his services and stuff. And the public protector employed him without, following the proper procedure in terms of his employment. And a policy was created after the fact, to almost validate his appointment as a political advisor. And eventually he was even given the position of chief of staff. So I think, that in itself points to an element of misconduct on her part as a public protector. And I think, as Honorable Malem has repeatedly asked, why does she need a political advisor? That office is not political in its nature. It may, be charged with some investigations that are politically charged and the like, but it's not supposed to be politically aligned to any kind of ideology, etc. It's supposed to serve the people of the Republic of South Africa, irrespective of their political affiliation and the like. And so if you have, the public protector requiring a political advisor, you have to ask yourself, for what reason would she need a political advisor, when that office is not political in its nature? It wasn't intended to be political in its nature. And so, just those points around the use of Sianoho attorney as a conduit for certain external parties to be paid for providing services that ordinarily wouldn't be permitted, in terms of what is ordinarily permissible. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ngosi.
Yeah, with all what Honorable Gondo has indicated, then the questions 4 to 7 would be answered as follows, that the use of external people to influence her decisions didn't ensure her independence. So that her conduct was not independent. She sought legal advice from people who are not lawyers. She sought, in that regard, she even received an opinion on how to attack a judge, which she continues to do. And on 5, that failure was, in my opinion, intentional on her part. She did not have anything to proffer, and on the basis of what this legal advice and opinions were made, she then takes a decision. And in conducting the investigation, of course, that means that she would not be independent, and that it's intentional. There is no impartiality. There will never be impartiality if you use those type of services. And I also think that because there was internal capacity available, why wouldn't she rely on internal capacity? Secondly, if they existed a panel of attorneys, why for legal opinions didn't he go to that panel? Of course, we know that frequently Sianoho is appointed, but why wouldn't he go to Sianego for an opinion instead of going of instructing that her staff consult Ngobeni. On an unrelated but relevant issue, Chair, is the conduct of Nyembe, her conduct in relation to Nyembe. And I think that I agree with Honorable Gwanda on that. Secondly, on Ngobeni, I think that the committee may consider in its final recommendations to have this matter addressed by a body that is charged with that responsibility at institutional level or at professional level. That also goes to Sianego for attempting to or fronting on behalf of Ngobeni, in other words, putting on their letterheads and thus owning a work that it doesn't originate from them. I think it also should be referred to a professional body that deals with such. Yeah, Chair, that would be my input.
Thank you, Honorable Nkosi. Any other member? I think that was the last hand. Any other member, or is there any dissenting or differing view on what has been
explained? Another gadget, I'm failing to raise up my hand. If I may be allowed, I just want to support my colleague's chair that here there was no issues of impartiality. Again, this was deliberately done, because to invite external factors of other people to influence you, it drives you to move out from independence. So I'm really in support of what my other colleagues has indicated, that here we have got a problem, most especially to invite a person who doesn't belong to that particular institution to be your advisor and advise you even to challenge judges. To me, this really is a gross misconduct, and it was done intentionally, not unintentional. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Suwela. Thank you, Honorable Members. I think that's where we leave it there. Maybe any final remark, Honorable Advocate Mayosi, before I ask Slo Tsepo to put up the charge sheet?
No, I don't have anything to add, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Muri and Ms. Ibrahim. Thank you. Honorable members, you have for the last 2 days, full 2 days and long days, and the team has been taking notes of the issues you have raised in detail. I have no intentions to repeat those hours. We have those details, but it's important just as a summary and closing to, even though you have done it, to repeat that exercise. That, for example, in relation of charge one, do you confirm or agree that the misconduct in charge one on South African Reserve Bank was CX, as raised in the independent panel, is sustained of our discussion the last 2 days?
Chair, yes, I agree. It's sustained. My name is Peggy.
Thank you, Honorable Nkosi.
Honorable, agreed.
with the judge.
Honorable Siwela agrees. Is there any dissenting view on that? None, I proceed. Do we agree, therefore, in terms of, okay, Ms. Ibrahim?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I just wanted to note that as the committee's been deliberating, we've obviously been taking notes of specific subcharges where the committee has felt that there wasn't enough evidence to sustain a subcharge. So as I indicated yesterday, the charges contain various subcharges, but we understand the general sense of where the committee is going on each charge. So we'll make sure that that is captured. And when we get to charge three on the incompetent, I'd just like to make a comment as to some of how that relates to charge one and charge
there.
Two.
We'll yeah. come there. Let's go to charge two, the Friday, to ask members if you do confirm and agree that the misconduct charge as found to be prima facie in the independent panel, do you agree that it is sustained?
Agreed, Chairperson. Agreed.
Honorable Lotrit and Honorable Lagode, thank you. We now go to three. Charges of incompetence in both one and two, which is Saab and Friede. And maybe before I ask you, maybe Ms. Ibrahim to come in. This is about incompetence.
Yes, so Chair, you recall that the first charge is a charge of misconduct in respect of Saab, and the second charge is a charge of misconduct in respect of Friede. When we come to number three, it's got to do with those same two cases, but now looking at incompetence as per the rules.
Yes.
So in respect of Saab, charges 1.1.2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are in fact repeated word for word in 7.1.2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. So they mirrored for both misconduct and incompetence. So the committee would have to make an assessment as to whether they feel that it arises to misconduct, otherwise incompetence on those ones for Saab. When it comes to Friede, it's slightly different. There isn't that word for word repetition. So if I give an example, 4.1 in Friede says that the TP narrowed the scope required by the three complaints without providing any rational proper explanation. But under incompetence, there's a charge that says failure to conduct a lawful and meaningful investigation and the demonstration of a failure to appreciate her legal duty to come towards the aid of the vulnerable. So one could then argue the same set of facts would apply there. So the committee would need to just give us guidance on whether you're of the view that these charges under Saab, firstly 1.1.2 to 6, where you've said that meets the threshold for misconduct, then when we draft it, we're not going to repeat that under incompetence, if that makes sense. And we'll do the same for Friede, where the committee's indicated that there are certain things that they believe to have been misconduct.
Okay, and the incompetency would include the CD report, the FSCA, ne?
Yeah, that's separate. So under incompetence, there was the additional, the CD report was an additional issue. And
sure.
Then for Friede, under incompetence, there were also some extra things. So for example, the PP is charged with demonstrating a failure to appreciate that her investigation was wholly inadequate and grossly negligent. So this would have been about how she conducted the litigation in that she defended, if I could put it this way, a doomed report in the first place.
Okay.
Whereas on the misconduct, it's the fact that she perhaps gave contradictory statements. So we will do that analysis based on the comments that the committee's made now throughout the deliberation.
Thank you. Honourable Mylan.
Chair, I just need a clarity. Is it not possible for it to be both misconduct and incompetence on these particular cases?
If you have the evidence to motivate for that, but let me hear Mr. Brian. It's possible.
So Chair, the difficulty is incompetence is when you don't have the knowledge to do something or the ability or skill to perform. So I don't know how to drive, therefore I haven't driven properly, as opposed to I know how to drive, but I've been negligent in the way that I've driven, or I've intentionally driven in a bad way to cause an accident, if that makes sense. So
you're leaving out in that incompetence this issue of it being a sustained habit, that thing that you repeat.
Yes.
Okay, let me hear Honorable Mylan.
So Chair, if I can just come in again, the definition of incompetence, because it's a lack of knowledge to carry out and the ability or skill to perform, it means that where the committee was of the view that there was some deliberate intent. So in other words, if the committee was of the view that the PP failed to furnish a Section 7-9, not because she didn't know that she ought to have furnished a Section 7-9 notice, but she chose not to do that, then that doesn't take you to incompetence. That then takes you to misconduct.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered.
You're covered. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further responses to the issues raised by Ms. Ibrahim? Are we all together? Are we... Honorable Maneli?
Thanks, Chair. I take it that the issues that are raised are more to clarify us as we have been raising the issues.
Yeah.
So it's not a reopening of a discussion we've had.
Yeah.
I thought it's important that I raise that point. For that reason, Chair, it also gets to the point where in some instances we have raised this thing that you may have the knowledge, you are a legal person and all that. But necessarily where you even get to be unable to interpret the law correctly, surely it is not just a misconduct. It also gets to be an issue of incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying I take it that the point has been raised just for us to know that at a point when we get the final draft, that cleansing would have been done so that it's justified. For that reason, I'll agree. So that we move to the next point. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Maneli. With there's no other hand, let's therefore move. Are you happy, Mr. Brian?
Yes, Chair, that's in order.
Thank you. Thank you. And then there would have been the, as you mentioned, link to that, the CD matter. And then, which is a discussion we had where we had named individuals and members would have pronounced on each of those, with a bit of a good discussion and some debate on 10.1. And then I think the team would have taken up those notes where members would have differentiated either this being harassment or victimization and so on. But I want to put that to you as well, whether you, in regards to those issues we discussed, in relation to the report of the independent panel on some of them, what your view would be. Honorable Ngosi?
Chair, I would say that we sustain that. Firstly, I want to bring in an issue I raised in the day on different opinions of or different evidence given to the community, particularly by, I think, the doctor in the Western Cape, the lead
doctor Lamola.
Yeah, Mr. Lamola. I think that he presented a quite a cogent different point in support of the BP, but measured against the, I don't want to use the word overwhelming, but the substantive and cogent opinions, I mean evidence of all the others, it doesn't measure. Secondly, he was very remotely related to head office as indicated and would therefore not have been in the coal face of the atmosphere of head office. So he is not like there in the action and in the atmosphere of this constant pressure that is applied to people and the Audis that are issued to people because, let me say, in an unreasonable manner. I think even though he thinks the PP is a good person, which he thinks so, I think the experience and the lived experience of these others is quite different. And that will go to the other person. I can't remember the surname. The other witness. Thanks, Chair. But the issues are sustained.
Thank you, Honorable Ngosi. Any other member? Honorable Maneli?
Thank you, Chair. First, I agree on the part of noting those that would have been speaking for the PP. As well as the fact that there may be those, and particularly if we were to take Madiba, took a different angle there. So I would want that when that report, that thing that's a proposal, that is also captured. Because we had agreed to take them one by one, even though they are put in the charge as listed collectively. I think for me that's important, just so that in endorsing.
Yeah, just repeat that. Who are those?
Yeah. No, the point I'm making, Chair, is that you have a list there of people.
Yes.
From Samuel and so on. I'm just saying that we have expressed a view individually on those.
Yes.
And that is why you would have others where we can't express a view as the outcome of this committee deliberation.
No.
So I'm just saying that in the final report, I take it that it will be understood that not making or expressing a view on those that we have indicated does not remove the fact that we agree with the charge. Thank you.
Okay. I get you. I was just looking at those names. Okay, that's fine. Thank you, Honorable Maneli. Any other member? None. Ms. Ibrahim, any comment?
No. Thank you, Chief.
I'm just checking if you're still there.
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. I think the others are fresh. We've just done them, which is your CR17 and the SARS. Again, just to go back to you, members, in relation to independent panel, what your views are, do we sustain?
Yeah, In relation to SARS, we sustain. I propose. In relation to Busasa, we sustain. I propose. In relation to OGI, I propose we sustain.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Honorable Ngosi. Any other member?
I'm covered. Thank you.
Support.
Yes, I'm saying I support it, so I'm covered on the point, so I don't want to repeat.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support that, Chair. Support that.
Thank you, Honorable Nola. Is there any dissenting view or a differing view? Honorable Milam, is that a dissenting view?
No, Chair.
Oh, okay. I thought you had your hand up, so I saw wrong there. So thank you.
I support Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Am I missing out anything further, Ms. Ibrahim? I think one recorded. Yeah. Maybe just a small point to inquire from members. So there's also the issue of the party with Mr. Zwane. Do we have any evidence there to indicate that the PP would have intentionally done what is reported there, Honorable Maneli?
No, thank you, Chair. I would want to persuade the committee not to sustain that issue and exonerate the suspended PP on that matter. And my view is quite simple, Chair, is that we didn't get with Mr. Zwane giving any version to the committee itself. And if he came with a guess like it was in the passage, it's just also an African to just say, and kufuni apu, funani, you know. So all I'm saying is that I think the relationship would have been understood to be professional, that it being a social gathering will also keep your professionalism in that regard. So exonerate on that one. And I'm not sure if you will go to this last point we're discussing, Chair, where we also talk to the James one.
Oh, there?
Yes, I think also on the James one, so that you are consistent, that there's no change of view at this point. It's also not to express a view there, but of course noting that it may be a point that has been looked at either by courts, but also the panel, but it has not really been engaged in the committee's no expression. So that no expression does not erase that from information available. Yes, there may have been those findings by other bodies. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Maneli. Any other member? No further comments.
I support Honorable Maneli that we be consistent.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Suela. Any dissenting view? None. Thank you. Any last point, Ms. Ibrahim?
Chair, we'll take the time to put everything together in the draft report. So that is where members will really need to apply their mind and make sure that we've captured everything correctly. Of course, we're going to use all the evidence that was before the committee, the charges and the standards of conduct that I took the committee through yesterday.
Okay, thanks for that. Just to, as we wrap up on the members before I thank you, just to indicate that we have the intention, so I need to still negotiate that with the team so that I don't put them under too much pressure, because what we're interested in is the quality of our report. I was hoping to give you that timeline now, but not in a position, but we'll communicate that with you. The intention is for us to have a that sign-off meeting for that report, and we're looking at coming Friday, but it looks to be tight given that we're working today. It would have been good if we were working only on Friday. So it will be between that day or maybe next Monday, because we want to make sure that go to that meeting so that you would have applied your mind into the report, and when you get to the meeting, we're able to have a flow of your commentary and your agreement on the issues that are emanating from your own discussion over the last 2 days, Friday up until 8:15, and today the time now is just after 6, having started from 9:00. So that would be that meeting, which I call a sign of the report. We're also looking at having a separate day after that, where we're having a meeting, because remember, after we did the sign off, we're going to give the PP the last Audi to comment on that report, as would have been in our terms of reference and the directives in our program. The matter was expressed on Friday that we must maintain and keep that, regardless of whether she takes the opportunity or not take the opportunity. We also looking at, therefore, maybe we can combine when we receive the response or non-responses to do what we're thinking as the reflections and lessons meeting, where some of the issues that have been raised here that are not having a direct correlation with the report, but get into the realm of the kind of lessons we're drawing out of our process, so that it benefits the next and future endeavors, it benefits the National Assembly. We know we need to have a dedicated meeting for that, which is not mixed with the report. The report has got to be very precise on the issues that are within our mandate and as well as the motion. So that's part of the thinking. And so basically, after today, budget for additional 2 to 3 meetings to close shops properly, but they will not be as heavy as this one. You have done the difficult work. You have sacrificed, you have maintained discipline. Today, every time I checked, you would have maintained quorum throughout the day on a Sunday, having started at 9, committed to your cause of the oath you have taken as a parliamentarian and the work that you have done under very difficult circumstances and conditions. But to encourage members to indicate that we're almost there in terms of our work. And so we're going to be doing our work with the team in order to make sure that the ideas, the interactions, the interventions you've made are reflective of the report that you would have produced yourself. So just wanted to make that before I close the meeting. Honorable Sukas, I saw your hand.
Chair, no, I think I must possibly be out of step now, because I just wanted to add general comments, but I think you've already advanced to the point of closing the meeting. So
okay. Those comments will still be accommodated when we meet again, so they are not forbidden. Thank you, Honorable Sukas. Any last words from the evidence leaders for now? Or Mr. Brian?
No, Chair.
Edward Bauer?
Nothing on my side.
Okay, Edward Mansley.
No, Chair, no last words from me.
That's fine. The last word call was just to check if all of you are there. Thank you. Honorable members, If there is nothing else you want to raise or comment, we are going to be thanking you for really staying laser focused on this work. And you have given us further work with the team to go and produce a quality report on your behalf. So thank you very much. The time is 22 minutes past six, and please go watch netball, the Proteas against Jamaica before it concludes. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Chairperson.